Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
According to BuzzFeed News, President Trump told leaders at the G7 summit last weekend that Crimea is Russian because its people speak Russian. And then he talked about his plans to build a wall on our border with Spain.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's episode, Seth talks to actor and comedian Hannibal Buress, who also continues the conversation backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Republicans are applauding President Trump's summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un as Trump faces a mountain of new legal problems. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. In the span of just a few days, Trump managed to throw a tantrum over a summit with our allies at the G7, call for Russia to be admitted back into the group, and lavish praise on brutal dictator Kim Jong-un. Every day, he acts more and more like an NBA player who's trying to get traded to a rival team. And yesterday, he returned to a familiar target, the media.
The president is on the proverbial warpath. Another tweet from this morning, quote, so funny to watch the fake news, especially NBC and CNN. They're fighting hard to downplay the deal with North Korea. 500 days ago, they would have begged for this deal. Looked like war would break out. Our country's biggest enemy is the fake news so easily promulgated by fools.
Ooh, promulgated. It's always great when he tweets a word you know he'd never take a swing at in real life. It's like if your pizza delivery guy showed up wearing a monologue. Get out of here with that. Not a monologue, a monocle. I tell a monologue. The problem is, what happened is, even though I'm doing a closer look, in my head I'm thinking, I killed the monologue tonight. So anything even close. So Trump's once again declared the media America's biggest enemy. You know who's really breathing a sigh of relief right now? ISIS. Those guys are like, I know this sounds crazy, but I think we're in the clear. Of course, Trump's media comment came and went without a peep from elected Republican leaders. Now, if it seems to you like the GOP is cultishly loyal to Trump, you're not alone. Tennessee Senator Bob Corker admitted as much yesterday.
We're in a strange place. I mean, it's almost, it's becoming a cultish thing, isn't it? It's not a good place for any party to end up with a cult-like situation as it relates to a president that happens to be purportedly of the same parties.
Oh, come on. It's not a cult. In a cult, you have to abandon all your beliefs and have weird sex with a bunch of people, and okay, maybe it's a cult. The GOP's cultish loyalty to Trump is on display this week after Trump's summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Now, remember, Republicans and Fox News lost their minds when President Obama bowed to Saudi Arabia's king and shook hands with Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. And yet, they were silent today when Korean state TV released this previously unseen footage of Trump saluting a North Korean military officer. Okay, wow. Not only did Trump salute a military officer from a brutal dictatorship, but the guy gave Trump a down low too slow. Look at that. Oh, sorry, dog. By the way, check out Kim Jong-un's face after Trump salutes the officer. He's smiling, but he's definitely thinking, oh, man, tell me you got that on tape. Again, to be clear, we cannot stress this enough. Diplomacy is good. Talking is infinitely better than threats of war. But it doesn't require gushing over a brutal dictator or manufacturing preposterous lies, which Trump did again just last night. For example, he and Kim struck a deal to return the remains of U.S. soldiers who died in the Korean War. Now, U.S. involvement in the Korean War ended in 1953. So if we're being generous, the parents of those soldiers would be at least 100 years old. Which makes this claim Trump made last night on Fox News very hard to believe.
One of the things that really I'm happy is that the soldiers that died in Korea, their remains are going to be coming back home. And we have thousands of people that have asked for that. Thousands and thousands of people. So many people asked when I was on the campaign, I'd say, wait a minute, I don't have any relationship. But they said, when you can, President, we'd love our son to be brought back home. You know, the remains.
There's no way that story's accurate. Why does Trump always have to make up a little one-act play where someone begged him for something and he got it done? If he signed a bill making June 14th National Cupcake Day, he would say, oh, a little old lady came up to me. She said, please, Mr. Trump, my dying son's wish was that June 14th would be Cupcake Day. Please, sir, is there anything you can do? And I said, I would, but the Democrats won't let me. But then I did it because I'm strong and I absolutely don't have dementia. It's never been clear. It's never been clear that the Republican Party is Trump's party, and the GOP's silence enables Trump as he contends with one scandal after another. In fact, every day seems to bring fresh new legal trouble for Trump. Before Trump even started his presidency, he settled a fraud lawsuit against Trump University. Now he's entangled in multiple criminal probes. And today, he got yet another lawsuit to worry about, this time over his scandal-plagued charity, the Trump Foundation.
New York's attorney general is now suing President Trump and three of his children, Ivanka, Eric, and Don Jr., regarding the president's personal charity. The suit alleges persistently illegal conduct, claiming the president repeatedly misused the nonprofit's funds, paying off business debts, golf club decorations, and multimillion-dollar getaways at his campaign events in 2016.
That's right. Trump used money from his charity to decorate his golf club, when he should have used it to spruce up his golf look. Look at him. He looks like Droopy's deadbeat dad. And on top of all that, Trump is also dealing with the fact that his personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, is under federal criminal investigation. Cohen set up a secret shell company to pay off Stormy Daniels and took in millions from major companies and a Russian oligarch. And now, even Cohen seems to be expecting an indictment.
Trump allies reportedly view the legal cloud hanging over Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, at least as ominous as Robert Mueller's investigation. Michael Cohen has told friends that he expects to be arrested any day now, according to a source close to Cohen.
In fairness, he's probably been expecting to be arrested for years. Cohen probably RSVPs to weddings, yes, unless indicted. Trump and his inner circle are clearly very nervous about Cohen. There's probably no one closer to Trump and his personal finances. And Trump's confidants admit that if Cohen were to turn on Trump, he could cause Trump real damage. One former White House official told Vanity Fair, Trump should be super worried about Michael Cohen. If anyone can blow up Trump, it's him. I'm sorry, but Donald Trump has already blown up. He's blown himself up 1,000 times, but somehow he keeps walking away. He's President Wile E. Coyote. And like Wile E. Coyote, Trump has been obsessed with trying to catch his roadrunner, Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Mueller's the one who referred the Cohen case to prosecutors in New York, and Trump has attacked him relentlessly, calling Mueller's investigation rigged and unconstitutional. And yet, Both Mueller's probe and the Cohen investigation have escalated rapidly. In fact, Cohen himself might even be helping now.
The White House is closely watching what happens with the president's former personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, who's seeking new legal counsel. The question looming large here, could Cohen be ready to flip on his former boss?
Sources telling ABC News, Cohen is likely to cooperate with federal prosecutors.
Wow, so the president's personal fixer is going to cooperate with federal prosecutors. Robert Mueller, any comment? Of course, Trump's other big target has been ex-FBI Director James Comey. Trump has claimed Comey was biased against him. Today, the Justice Department Inspector General finally released a report on Comey's actions during the 2016 campaign. And if anything, this report makes clear that Comey helped Trump by reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails just days before the election. And on top of that, the report includes this infuriating detail about Comey's own email use.
There's a portion of the report that says James Comey used a personal email account, a Gmail account, to conduct FBI business.
That's right. James Comey was using a private email account while he was investigating Hillary Clinton for using a private email account. The issue that the entire election revolved around, and one of the biggest reasons Donald Trump was elected president. So if you'll excuse me for just one second, I'm gonna put my head on the desk and mutter mother
mother.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is a comedian and actor you know from films such as Blockers and Neighbors and Comedy Central's Broad City. He stars in Tag, which is in theaters Friday. Please welcome back to the show our friend Hannibal Buress, everyone.
Great to see you, buddy.
Good to see you too, Matt.
It's been a while since you were here because last time you were here, we were expecting our first child, and you gave me some baby name advice.
Yeah. What did I say?
You said the key to naming a kid is to give them a bunch of middle names so that if they don't like their first name, they have options.
That's just a theory. I don't have any kids, man.
I'm going to run the new name by you, Axel. What do you think of Axel as a name?
Axel sounds like a fraternity leader.
Yeah.
Axel, that's a strong name.
Yeah. I think he'll stick with it. I don't think he'll middle name it.
Beverly Hills Cop fan?
Yes, that's what. My wife was a huge Beverly Hills Cop fan. I wanted Foley, and she wanted Axel.
Hey, compromise.
We came together.
Compromise.
So it's always so good to see you. You came up with a genius idea. And obviously, being a performer, being a stand-up, important to get your name out there.
Yeah.
And so you decided a way to get your name out there was to sponsor an MMA fighter.
I did.
What are you eating now?
I have popcorn. You got good snacks back there.
you put popcorn in your breast pocket?
Where was I supposed to put it?
No.
This jacket doesn't have regular pockets for some reason. I don't know. So I put it in my sack.
Okay.
So I went to this fight.
Uh-huh.
And I saw all these other people with banners. And they had their names on the fighters' banners, and they weren't that exciting. It would be like Toyota dealerships. You know, like a Kansas City Toyota dealership is sponsoring a fighter. I can definitely sponsor a fighter. So I reached out to this fighter and asked if I could sponsor her and put my face and website on her outfit, and they were like, yeah.
So here is the fighter you sponsored in her Hannibal Buress outfit. All right, so did she win her fight?
She didn't fight because they have to cut weight.
Yeah.
For the fight, and so she missed weight by a little bit. It's a tough process, cutting weight, so unfortunately she wasn't able to make it. But that was tough for me, and so I didn't want to have that happen again. So
right. Now, do you lose your money, or are you just kind of, when you sponsor a fighter who doesn't fight?
I didn't lose the money, but I lost that outfit.
Okay.
I asked them, I said, can you send that outfit back? And they were like, nah. I'm like, why not? You didn't fight an outfit. And they just won't send back the outfit. I was like, I'll send you the FedEx envelope. Just give me the outfit back. Whatever.
All right. So how'd you get around it second time out?
So second time, I waited about a year. So this year, I said, you know what? I don't want that to happen again. I learned from my mistakes. So I said, I'm going to escalate. So I hit up the promotion, Invicta Fighting Championships is the name. And I asked if I could just sponsor the whole thing and put my face on the mat. That way, no matter what happens, I'll be on there.
So there's a fight that actually happened. I mean, the best part about this is that you're actually looking at where the action is.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm like, wow, y'all should relax.
Yeah, you don't look like a guy who's in a ring. You look very laid back for what's happening.
Yeah, laid back. You got to just have balance for the situation. But that's exciting.
Do you feel like you have more of a profile now after doing this?
No, not at all. It was, I just did it for fun. It was just really exciting to watch. It was no return on investment. It was just purely for love of the game. I'm happy about it. Yeah.
And for some fighters, you know, their whole life, you will be tied to their memory.
Right.
Of that, you know, I'll never forget. I pinned her, looked over, and there was Hannibal.
It was Hannibal right there with a blank stare. Fighting is tough, though. I think about older fighters. Like when, you know, they get into their 40s, it's tougher for them versus athletes in other sports because you talk about like a basketball player that gets to be 40. They lower his minutes. They say, okay, you're old. You're tired, so we're only going to play you 20 minutes. But if you're an old fighter, it's no relaxed version of fight. It's just still somebody else trying to punch you in the face. Like, I got to punch. I'm going to knock your old ass out. There's no easy version of being old. You just like got to get brain damage.
Yeah, I think you don't. You're gonna come out in the first round and the third round.
Yeah, it's none of that. Yeah, you could be a relief pitcher. Like, okay, you can't pitch the full game. Just come in for the fifth and the sixth. But old fighter, nah, gotta kick you in the face, old man. It's the name of the game.
I would argue too. In this kind of fighting, I bet 30's old, right? I
mean, 30's. Yeah, getting into the 30's. Yeah. It's tough, man.
It's a tough game.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, you and I, we can do this forever.
It's just talking
and eating popcorn out of your coat.
Yeah. Eating popcorn out of your coat. You sit down. You don't even stand up.
I got out of that.
Like, I don't even want to stand up on my monologue anymore.
I was like, I'm 40. I'm going to sit down. Speaking of working out, you've been working out more. You've been trying to get in shape.
You're trying to get healthy,
You
man.
Look good, man.
Thank you. Yeah. I stopped drinking, started going to the gym. It's been nice. I've been going, I like group fitness. I can't work out solo.
Oh, so you got to be part of the whole team.
I need some music.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It can be terrible music. Because then I just envision myself like, once you get in shape, you won't have to listen to this anymore. You have to listen to this terrible music because you fat. But once you trim up, you won't have to hear this anymore. But yeah, I like cycling.
Okay.
Because you clip your feet into it. And I think psychologically, that makes you do it.
Right.
And it makes it tougher to bail because you're like, I don't want to unlock and leave. Now, leave the cycling studio. It's dark in there. You let all the light in. And everybody just sees you fail in bright light. But it's some of the classes are weird because they put your performance up on the screen.
And is it about how many miles you went?
Revolutions per minute and power. And they put your name and bike number up there on the screen for everybody to see. It's super embarrassing. Now these suburban white ladies think they crushed Donald Glover in spin class. It's dark in those rooms.
Yeah.
Put whatever name, slip out. Yeah.
You're going on vacation. Where are you going? You're going to Thailand, Brazil?
Gonna go to Thailand. Yeah. I've never been before. You've been before?
I've never been to Thailand, no.
Yeah, I'm gonna go over there. I'm gonna try train Muay Thai kickboxing.
Oh, so you're gonna go exercise on vacation?
Yeah, because I want some I don't want to just lay on the beach. Well, I do want to lay on the beach, but I want to have some structure and feel like I earned laying on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Some of the best vacations. My wife and I would go hiking, and which was one of the best vacations because you would, you know, the whole day would be like walking, you feel exercise, and at the end of the day, you'd eat pasta. It would be great.
Chill out and do something. I haven't been to Thailand before. I've been to Japan.
Did you, have you performed in Japan?
I did a stand-up show in Japan, but you wouldn't be able to tell. If you took a picture of the show, you wouldn't be able to tell it was in Japan. It was a bunch of, I guess they call them, they say expats.
Yeah.
But that's just immigrants. But when there's white people in an Asian country, they call them expats. With expats. No, you immigrants, but you just got a fancy word now. Expatriates. No. You're just a working immigrant.
That's true. They fancied it up. That's not fair at all.
Not at all.
I want to ask about this movie, Tag. This is a true life story about real guys who've had a game of tag going for 40 years, right?
40 years.
Yeah. And what did you think when you first heard this was a real thing guys were doing?
I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
People are like, you think it's weird? No, I do the Eric Andre show. That's weird.
That's weird. True. Yeah.
Game of tag? That's easy. That's simple.
That's true. Doing Eric Andre has really raised your bar for what counts as weird.
Yeah, what counts as weird is nothing.
So I want to ask about... I want to ask about this because this happens a lot to actors. Actors come on talk shows. There's a clip. And I want to show a clip from Tag.
Yeah.
But you guys don't get to choose the clip.
We don't.
Oftentimes, it's a surprise to you right before you walk out.
Right. But I saw what clip they want. I wanted to have input on a clip because I feel like I'm the one here talking.
All right. So let me show. I'll show the clip they sent first, and then we'll show what you suggested.
All right.
All right. So first, here's the clip they sent for Hannibal and Tag.
I've got pizza rolls pizza roll boys.
Ooh, pizza roll.
Is that marijuana I smell?
What?
It's my pot. I'm really sorry.
Oh, so it's your weedy. I think I'm getting a contact high.
Okay.
Hits me deep. Below the belt, you know. I've got a belt upstairs. I use it on naughty little boys.
Oh, it was really nice speaking with you. Thank you for the pizza rolls.
What the f*** is going on?
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a bad clip?
Yeah.
All right, should we show what you want to do or you want to explain what you wanted first?
Show what I wanted to
do. Okay, so I would say, he's in the new film Tag. Here's a clip.
Ooh, he's a rogue.
What?
This gets to the point.
Yeah.
You don't want to spoil too much of the movie.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he said, Visa Rose, I'll go see that. Is it 90 minutes of everybody saying pizza rolls? I feel like that creates mystery. Like, what is that about? I gotta see it. Pizza rolls. Yeah.
You have a new television show idea.
I have a new TV show idea.
You're gonna pitch it for us here.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
It's a man on the street show.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, Hey, Come Here. Yeah, so I just stand out on the street in, like, a high foot traffic area, and I yell at people, Hey, come here! Then they come over here, and I say, What are your biggest regrets in life? And they tell me, and then I say, All right, now go over there!
So you're a man on the street. You're very static in this.
Yeah.
You don't have to move around at all.
Yeah.
Because, like, Billy Eichner runs
he
around
runs
New York
around.
City.
It's the opposite. I'm grounded.
Yeah.
Come here! Now go over there. 1,000 episodes. Let's go, everybody. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm on board. Give it up for Hannibal Buress, everybody. Tag in the theater. Friday. Pizza rolls.
Hey, this is Kevin. We are backstage with Hannibal Buress. Hey, Hannibal. Thanks for sticking around.
What's up, Kevin?
How's it going?
It's going all right, man.
Good. We're so psyched that you're back. You met Seth years ago.
2009.
Yeah. Yeah. And you were a writer on SNL for a season when he was there.
I was.
There's a story that you have. You had a flight when he initially wanted to meet with you. You didn't want to meet with him or come in for the meeting initially. What was going on?
Well, I got the call or email that he wanted to meet. I had a flight back to Chicago. There was a Priceline, Name Your Own Price flight.
Uh-huh.
And those flights are not very flexible on changing and cancellation. And so I didn't want to give up the flight. I was like, I don't want meat. What, just to meet? What's going on? You know, in my head, I'm like, meeting? What do you want to meet for?
Yeah.
Because I hadn't submitted a sketch packet or anything, and I didn't consider myself a sketch act. So I'm like, what is the meeting? I didn't think, because I know sometimes people do general meetings, and so I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And so my agent, he's like, please. Please go to the meeting. And I'm like, fine, I'm going to take this risk with this Priceline ticket. I was able to get it changed, and I met with him, and he offered me the job to write on the show. So it's good that I took the meeting. But I wonder if I didn't take the meeting, would he have just been like, hey, we want you to write for Saturday Night Live? Or did he just want to meet me in a room to see if I was crazy or not? That was probably it. He wanted to see, hey, is this a crazy person? Or can he be around other people and be productive? So I think that's what he was trying to see.
That happens sometimes. You just want to do a face-to-face meeting where you just want to see how this person get along with everybody else in the room. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you made the money back, I think. And then you worked on 30 Rock right after SNL. You were a writer at 30 Rock.
I was writer at 30 Rock.
Yeah.
That was fun, but it was tougher. It was, well, just there's an aspect to sitcom writing called breaking story, which is not super exciting, but is necessary. Mm-hmm. And I was not good at breaking story and coming up with storylines. Also, at this point, I think they were on season 5 when I came in. So a lot of storylines had already happened. I would say, so 20-something episodes per season. So they had done 80-plus episodes of storylines. And so, I mean, that's 2 or 3 stories per episode. Yep. So you're talking about, you know, close to 200 stories have been done already. So a lot of, so, and so sometimes I would pitch stuff and they go, yeah, we did that already. Season two, we did that. And so,
it's kind of sitting in a room pitching jokes and ideas for where, what the characters could do and what where the storyline could do.
Yeah, that's what, and so, but it was, you know, they put me on camera a couple times as the homeless guy, which was, that was a fun thing to do. That was my first, acting thing. It was just me saying, yelling stuff as the homeless guy. But that was fun.
It recurred a few times, right?
I think I did maybe 5 episodes as the homeless guy. So it got going. That was fun.
Do you still see residual checks for that here and there?
Occasionally, but those have dwindled.
Yeah,
those are down to the cents and stuff. But you know,
you
know, it got a lot of people. That's how a lot of people got introduced to me, and now, or even they people will watch it now and they, oh, whoa, Hannibal was in 30 Rock. They kind of spot you after the fact, which is kind of cool.
And you've got what, 4 specials that you have?
4 specials that I've done, and excited to do the next one. But 4 specials, man. And it's nice to, because you know each one I was at kind of a different point in my life and career, and they're kind of little timestamps for my mental state.
Is there an amount of time that it takes to come up with a special typically? I mean,
it varies. You know, it just kind of varies on, I mean, a few things. One, you know, your productivity, and 2, when somebody wants to give you a special. So for a while, I was on kind of a year and a half or so clock where I was turning them around. I think Animal Furnace came out in 2012, and then Live from Chicago 2014, and Comedy Camisado 2016. But for this next one, I've been taking some time just to let it build for a little bit and just get more experience and work on it.
You're staying very busy between movies and shows. Broad City, which I'm sure a lot of people know you from too.
Yeah, Broad City has been, it's been insane how that's gone. And that really, you know, I did acting on, you know, 30 Rock. That was bit acting. But that was when I kind of realized how people connect to story and characters, how they really connect to, especially when you're the love interest of somebody. And so that kind of shifted the reaction I would get from women in the street a little bit, where they kind of see me as this dentist, not because they, you know, want to be Alana or relate to Alana or they relate to Abby. So if you're the male in those situations, they kind of are really excited to see you. And that was a new experience for me.
Yeah.
As far as that type of energy, like, you're the guy from the, you're so nice. And why'd you break up with her? It's like, cause she wrote that. She wrote it. I didn't write that.
You know, it's a TV show, right?
It's a TV show. She wrote it. Right. I did not have any. I didn't improvise us breaking up.
Right.
Hey, how about, you know what? Actually, I'm just going to switch this around.
Yeah.
And we'll switch the whole direction. So.
Well, you were very funny in Blockers also.
Thanks, man.
Kay Cannon's movie that came out a couple months ago.
That was awesome to do. That's the one thing that's been cool about working for this long. Like, I've been, you know, started SNL in 2009. So, like, Seth was the head writer at that time and now has his talk show. So that's cool to see that progression as I progress. Kate Cannon wrote, I wrote alongside her. Well, she did. I was a writer in title and she was a writer and she actually did it. I was a writer, but yeah, I didn't get that much on. So yeah, just to see her go from, you know, writing on 30 Rock to, you know, writing Pitch Perfect to directing her first feature. That was fun to do too.
Were you guys at 30 Rock together?
Yeah.
She was on
that when I was there. Right. She was a brilliant writer.
And you were also Neighbors and the sequel to Neighbors. I mean, what's it like when you're doing these big ensemble comedy movies?
The comedy is fun, man. It's fun to just, with Neighbors and Neighbors too, I played, you know, bit roles and notes. So those I can still enjoy the movie as a fan, and be excited to see my scene and how it plays in there, but it's not throughout that. So I'm kind of popping in, do a quick couple jokes, and then I'm out of there. So this time with Tag, I'm in it heavily. I'm one of the leads of the movie, so it's like kind of stressful watching it, and I'm nitpicking little scenes a little bit, even a scene where I'm kind of in the background while two other characters talking. I'm like, I'm looking stiff as hell in the background. My background business is not good enough. Like, there's one scene at the pre-wedding reception where I think Jake Johnson's character and Ham's character are talking, and I'm in the background with Annabelle Wallace, and I'm just kind of standing there staring forward, not even talking with her, just looking real. But man, I guess some people do that at parties. That's realistic. Sometimes people just stand by themselves and stare off into the distance at a party.
Just 1,000-yard stare, so, just thinking about the party.
Yeah, so thank you for helping me through that. I did fine.
You did great. You're very funny in the movie. The movie's very funny. I mean, that's another huge ensemble cast. Like you said, John Hamm, Jeremy Renner, who broke both of his arms during shooting.
He did. I wasn't on set. I think I was in my trailer when it happened. I wasn't in that coverage of the scene. But, yeah, he got right back to it, man. It's pretty. I mean, if I break my arms on a movie, I'm leaving the business. I'm not going back. I'm not finishing that movie at all.
Yeah,
that movie's cursed. First of all, acting isn't everything. Your health is way more important than a movie.
Yeah,
you know that.
He was back same day.
Yeah, he was back the same day. Yeah. I'm quitting the business if that happened. Yeah.
So you're still doing stand-up. You're taking the summer off from touring. You told Seth you're traveling a little bit, but you're doing some stand-up dates in September.
Yeah, September, right. Doing Milwaukee, Madison, Minneapolis, Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, and a couple other spots. Oh, Texas, Dallas, Houston, Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite city to perform
in? I mean, hometown Chicago, of course. New York, just because of the energy and, you know, all of the clubs. New Orleans is fun because of the nightlife. I like doing festivals just because you get to do shows with other friends. And it's always like to have something to do after the show. The best thing is when I'm in town and somebody else is in town, some rapper or musician or another comedian. And after my show, I can just head over to their show and hang out. That's always a good time. But I'm excited to get back to Austin. I haven't done a headliner show in Austin or Houston or Dallas. I haven't played those places in a little while. So it's fun. Most spots are. There's a couple cities that have been iffy, but that might have been venue things and not necessarily the city. But
yeah,
I'm excited for these.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on the movie again, and thanks for coming back.
Thank you, man.
Okay.
Appreciate
Talk to you soon. Yep.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.